League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel, Barry, and Nick till 4 o'clock, and within a matter of minutes, we will have Coach Kevin McHale on. So if you want to talk hoops with the coach, he will be available. Obviously, the Rockets are of a topic that people want to get into because of the fact that the surprise Rockets did lose last night but have been playing phenomenal basketball. MVP, is the triple-double weighted enough in this year's or too much in this year's MVP race? Because of the fact, when you think about this now, as Barry and I were talking yesterday, and I said, because it's been so long since we've seen the numbers that Westbrook and Harden are chasing, averaging a triple-double. Oscar Robertson averaged a triple-double in 1961-62. So if that's what you want to get into, the last time it was done, that's why it's so impactful that even if Westbrook and the Thunder aren't a playoff-contending team, if he finishes the regular season averaging a triple-double, it's going to be an accomplishment. It's going to not only take notice by the voters, it's going to factor in to who wins the MVP. So James Harden and the Rockets have to take note because that's something that's going to factor in, and that's something to be considered. And that's something, without further ado, that we can ask the one-time coach of the Houston Rockets, the Hall of Famer from the Boston Celtics, the 32 hangs in the rafters at the Garden. He is Kevin McHale. Coach, welcome in as always. Appreciate you joining us.
No problem.
Where does the world travel you to this week?
I am in the lovely San Francisco with the Golden State Warriors versus the Detroit Pistons tonight on NBA TV, or on TNT, excuse me.
And you working with Marv?
I am working tonight with Reggie Miller and Kevin Harlan.
Oh, your man Kevin Harlan.
It should be fun.
That should be a good game to watch. So, gang, you can catch Kevin McHale on the second game of the TNT doubleheader tonight. Check your local listings. Coach, I was talking about it. Barry and I were talking about it yesterday, and we were talking about it coming out of the break. I don't know how much you heard of it. But I keep telling people, you were a part of Harden's campaign for MVP when he got beat by Steph, and they said Steph's team was better at the end. That factored in. I keep telling people what Westbrook is doing. And if he averages and is somehow able to average for the first time since 1961-62 when the Big O did it, a triple-double, it's going to weigh heavy on voters when they weigh in, regardless of whose team's better. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think right now you're talking about two guys putting up just unbelievable numbers with what James is doing. And Westbrook, at the end of the day, if Westbrook's team can continue to win, I don't think they'll have as good a record as the Rockets at the end of the season, but continue to win and you'll get in the playoffs and he can average a triple-double, it will be really hard no matter what James does. And as good as James is playing, that won't have an effect on the people voting. It's just it was one of those things that people talked about no one ever doing again. And we can talk a lot about why right now those numbers are that high and how the league is and what's going on. But the fact that he's doing it is unbelievable. I mean, I thought when he did it, I said, okay, well, he's going to be able to do this for, a 10, 12, 15-game stretch. Then he does it for 20 games. And I said, okay, well, he did it for a quarter of the season. He's done it for a half a season now, which I'm like, wow. I'm starting to believe that he might be able to continue putting up those type numbers. He's kind of much must-watch TV for me. I watch Oklahoma City as much as I can, just exclusively just to kind of watch him and marvel at what he's doing.
And so Harden's got 11 triple-doubles on the year, okay? To put it in perspective, the year that Robertson did it for a season, averaged it for a season, he ended up with 41 triple-doubles. Westbrook's got 18 through 40 games. James has 11. So I'm trying to put it in perspective. I'm looking at all these comparisons, and I hate to say this for Rockets fans, but this is what's going to hurt James's campaign for MVP. He's having one hell of a season. The team's playing phenomenal basketball, overachieving across the board from what expectations were. But to be realistic, if Westbrook is able to average it for the year, it's going to factor in, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I just say, look, it's going to be a – if he does it, it'll be one of the more phenomenal feats I've seen in my – you know, individual feat that I've seen in my – my career in the NBA, from playing to GMing to coaching to announcing on TV, that, you know, the kid is doing something that is just so hard to explain to people how hard it is to do that. You know, go out there and get just even one of the, you know, average 30 points a game. Okay, how many people are going to do that in this league? Very few people have done that. Then you say, okay, average over 10 rebounds. Oh, you know, okay, there's very few people that do that. Average over 10 assists. I mean, yeah, you're to do that all in 1 year and average a triple double. I just don't see how they don't give it to him. And that's not taking away anything from James. I think James is playing great. It's just what Russell's able to do is just almost superhuman. It's crazy to think that someone's capable of putting up those numbers.
All right. So with that being said, too, Coach, the other night Harden goes back to back 40 plus point triple doubles. It's only been done four times in the history of the league. Westbrook, Harden, Jordan, Maravich. I'm going to give you this question, and I'm going to let you have a wild card. You can go off the board if you want, but if you're going to start an NBA franchise and you get one of those four guys or a wild card, who are you taking?
No, I mean, you got to take – did you say Michael Jordan?
I did. That's why I said – you know what? Here's the thing that's crazy to me. I answered that question for some Twitter followers and friends last night, and I said Michael Jordan hands down. And I said, look, I wasn't – of the era to be able to say I saw Chamberlain and Russell, but I saw the greatest player I've ever seen play when I saw Michael Jordan, not taking away anything from anybody else. And they said, and one of them was an older guy, who said, if you saw Pistol Pete play in his prime, you would take him over Jordan. And I said, I did not see him play in his prime, but I can't see me taking anybody over Jordan.
No, I'm with you. I saw Pistol Pete. I mean, all those guys. They're you're talking about great players. And Pistol Pete was an unbelievable showman. If you just said, you know what, I'm gonna have a franchise. I'm gonna have an unbelievable showman as the face of the franchise, and I'm gonna bring people in, and they're just gonna enjoy themselves, and Pete's gonna put on a hell of a show. I definitely you'd go like, okay, Pete's right there with Michael. But if you're just talking about a winner and a guy who's just going to drive his team, and you know, all that being said, there's another guy I would throw in there, and he's a wild card. I mean, if you had to start a team right now, how would you not start it with LeBron? Also, look what LeBron has done to teams. I'm not talking Kyrie Irving is a hell of a player. You know, Kevin Love was an all-star before he was with in Cleveland. But look what LeBron did with some of those teams in Cleveland before he went to Miami. He took them to the finals with who?
Yeah.
I mean, look at some of the guys he played with. He makes everybody better. But of that list of guys you said, I mean, no, Michael could absolutely.
But I'm giving you a wild card. If you want LeBron, I'm going to let you go off the board.
I'm surprised Coach didn't go Bird with the wild card.
I thought
card.
About it, yeah.
Yeah, no, look at I love Larry. And if you said to me, you know, hey, I get to play with him, I'd take Larry.
Oh,
I mean,
nice.
You know,
okay.
But you're talking about a team with – without me on it, and me, I'm not part of it. I'm just talking about other players. I just think LeBron does so many things for so many players and makes everybody so much better. You got to remember that year that he left Cleveland to go to Miami. That team won 64 or 65 games in Cleveland. The next year was roughly the same team without LeBron. They won like 25. That is an unbelievable jump. That guy.
So who would you take, Jordan or LeBron?
Well, I'd probably just go. Well, that's hard to say, man.
Uh huh.
Okay, hold on. Let me tell you something. If it depends on who the teammates were, but those would be the two guys I'd look at. I honestly think if you had a bunch of other good, solid players and stuff, you know, I think LeBron makes everybody better. If you had a bad team, Michael could just flat out carry a bad team, because LeBron's not capable of going out on a bad team and just getting 50 every single night. Michael could. Michael could just go out on a bad team and say, hey, you guys suck, you're not good enough, and just by the force of me, I'm going to go out there and we're going to win 50 games this year, you know.
So you are right now on a folding chair, blindfolded with your hands behind your back, and you have to pick one. I'm not letting you off this segment without picking one. Who are you taking?
Wow. I think he sometimes doesn't get quite enough credit in that. It's very easy to say Michael, and I love Michael, but I take LeBron.
Wow, that's big.
I tell you what, LeBron's a better rebounder. LeBron's a better passer. LeBron is a better, ball handler as far as just running stuff. You know, Michael was just a cutthroat. But I mean, to either one of them, you can't go wrong with.
If you could see my face right now when you said passer and ball handler, oh my, that's a debate for you and I to have on the golf course now.
Okay, absolutely. So
since you are just killing time. In your hotel room. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We got much more with you, and we appreciate your time, as always, if that's good with you.
No problem.
All right, Coach Kevin McHale will be back in just a second right here on ESPN 97.5.
Hear the 2017 NFL playoffs on ESPN 97.5. Seahawks, Falcons 3:30 Saturday and Cowboys, Packers 3:30 Sunday. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel, Barry, Nick, and our special guest, as we do weekly, the Hall of Famer, Kevin McHale. This is the week that we pound on Kevin McHale with tough questions, hard-hitting questions from those media, I can't say what you call us, which you are now a part of, but I did want to throw something out to you, but first, Barry wants to throw something
out. Yeah,
I wanted
to get this question in from El Jefe, one of our listeners. He wanted me to ask you about his Spurs and what are the chances they get first place or hold on to second place for the playoffs?
Rockets are going to push those guys right to the end. I think the Rockets are playing really well. They kind of had a little hiccup in Minnesota, but they on any given night they put so much offensive pressure on you that it's hard to score. I've seen the Spurs play really, really well, but I've also seen the Spurs go to some periods where they don't have the ball movement and they don't have the attacking of the paint that I think that they need to sustain it. Kawhi Leonard's playing great. I mean, you got to throw him in that conversation, too. We had a conversation about MVPs. But there are nights I just don't see the ball going from side to side, and I don't see anybody getting in the paint on a regular basis. I mean, they lived on Manu and Tony getting in there for years and collapsing the defense. There are times I just see them play really funky basketball to me. They're very un-Spurs-like. And I'm seeing more and more of that, and so I don't know, man. It'll be fun. I think it's going to be a race right to the end. It does always seem like Pops' teams kind of start hitting stride in the February. They got the rodeo trip coming up and all that stuff. So I don't know. It'll be fun, but can they hold off the Rockets? I don't know. The Rockets have been playing some of the most consistent ball in the last month and a half, 2 months, going through their December stretch where they played great and into this stretch. They've actually played better the last 6-7 weeks than the Spurs overall. But yet, you never give up on a Pops team. And I see now he's starting to play different players and kind of changing up his bench a little bit. And it seems like he kind of finds the right mixture to the cocktail at some point.
Well, and to use a Kevin McHale term, you're saying that right now the Spurs have a tendency to play with the ball getting a little sticky?
Yeah, they do. It doesn't move. It doesn't just pop the way that you see it. But then they all think, oh man, they're not doing it. And all of a sudden they'll go through a quarter where it'll just pop and move, and guys will make shots. And I look at that team as if Danny Green is getting a lot of trailing jump shots, those wide open threes, and Danny Green is really getting good shots, the ball's really popping. If they're not doing that, then you got too much of Kawhi holding it, Aldridge holding it, different guys holling it, and there's always a couple of barometers on every team. I mean, you look you look at the Rockets, and if Anderson is getting wide open threes and Trev is getting wide open threes, they've normally got good ball and good things happening. Every team kind of has your little, like I say, your barometer type guys that when you say, boy, this guy's getting wide open shots, that means it's good ball movement, good running, good spacing, a lot of good things happening.
Let me ask you a question. I've talked a lot about the fact that I won't make any playoff predictions till I know who's on what rosters. And we've talked about the fact that coming up to the trade deadline, what teams do you see in the top five in the NBA that need to make a move, should make a move, and do you see a few that are going to say stand pat? I thought I said all along Cleveland was missing a piece. They went out and they got themselves a Kyle Korver. You talk to other people who say they're still pursuing a point guard because of the fact that they missed Dellavedova and because they rely on Kyrie so much. So between Cleveland, Golden State, San Antonio, the Rockets, you tell me, Toronto, you tell me, what teams do you see making a move, need to make a move, and who's okay if they stand pat?
Well, I think one team that wants to make a move, and I think they have the assets to do it, are the Celtics. I think they've got Brooklyn's pick. They've got a ton of young guys. They got a lot of players that are really good players that kind of replicate each other. So they can afford to move a couple of them. And I think Boston just needs to get another, it's kind of hard to say a superstar player, but another guy that you can go to, another guy that can carry the team for periods. And on every championship team, you kind of have to have a guy that your offense is just nights where the ball's not flowing, you're not in a great flow, guys aren't making shots. You have to have one or two one-on-one guys that can just carry your team. They can go out and have a 15, 18 point quarter themselves and kind of single-handedly keep your team afloat. I can go back, to the microwave in Detroit, and you can go back and Hakeem Olajuwon, how many times he had an 18 point quarter that just kept the Houston Rockets alive. Michael Jordan made a living on doing that. You can go through all the championship caliber teams. They've had a guy that can kind of just carry them through tough times. The Celtics need one of those. You look at teams and you say, okay, would the Spurs, what do they need to add? I don't know. You look. There's just something when I watch them. There's something that I'm missing. Is it that next guy that can put the ball on the floor and get in the paint, like we talked about earlier? Is it a younger Tony Parker type guy that can just break the defense down? And when you need something, you run a little high pick and roll for him. He gets in the paint, collapses the defense, kicks it out. Now Kawhi's got a chance to set his feet. Green's got a chance to set his feet. Patty Mills, they all got a chance to set their feet and take their shot and make their shot. I think they need that. They just don't press the paint enough for me. Cleveland, yeah, I think LeBron gets tired of, I think LeBron's the guy asking for a point guard, a backup point guard. I think LeBron just wants to play. He's at the point right now where I think he'd be very happy if they brought in a backup point guard and he didn't have to assume that much responsibility. In the regular season, every night when Kyrie goes out, and Kyrie does a lot of stuff for them, but LeBron's their best playmaker by far, and I don't care who you bring in as a point guard, he's not going to be nearly the playmaker that LeBron is. So the ball will always be in LeBron's hand, but I think he wants someone to take some pressure off him with that second unit, and I that would help them a great deal, but everybody can tweak something. I you'd like to see another guy on Houston that can kind of get his own, just what we talked about. I think Eric's been good at that. I think when James sits down, I think Eric Gordon's been really good at coming off some pin downs, getting his own. It's always nice when you see your top players. Like, he can play with James, Eric Gordon can, or he can play without James. He can be the focal point, or he can be another cog in the wheel when James has got the ball a lot. But another guy that could just, can you throw the ball to the post on anybody in that team? Just one of those guys that can carry you for a little bit. And I always say in the playoffs, you're going to need someone just on the force of their just on the force of their skill and their will are going to keep you in a quarter in a playoff game on their own, just because they're going to be able to go get their own. You're not going to need a lot of 8, 9, 10 passes, all this movement to create the shot. And those guys aren't falling off trees either.
Cool. Sorry, Barry. I'm just real quick. Golden State doesn't need to make a move, or I keep saying they need to strengthen their bench a little bit.
Nah, you know what? I think they're figuring everything out. Yeah, I mean, I think that another just really high IQ, good all around basketball player to throw in with that second unit would help them. But I'm telling you what, the one thing that's scary about Golden State, look at their record. Okay, best record in the league. They're not hitting on all cylinders yet. Yeah, you know, I watch them a lot. They still have a lot of room to grow. I still think they're still all getting a little bit acclimated to each other. I think KD is coming into a system with a lot of ball movement, a lot of stuff, and he's still, they're trying to figure out who their second unit is. They're trying to figure out who plays better. Does KD play better with Steph on the floor? Does he play better with, Klay Thompson? What are their groupings? What's their second unit going to look like? I just look at them and I think that they are in the process of kind of figuring themselves out. When you are figuring yourselves out, and what are they, 32 and 7, well, they have a ridiculous record, and that's not a bad thing to be at. I think they're in a really good spot. I'm not sure that when you say adding stuff, are you talking about what are they going to give up to add that piece? When I look at teams, I'm being realistic. Like Boston has pieces to give up to add. I'm not sure San Antonio. They can probably go out and get a breakdown point guard. Ish Smith type guy that can just get in the paint. Fairly easy. But if you're talking, adding a superstar type guy, there are very few teams that have the assets to do that.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Coach, we know you got work to do. We're going to let you go. But quickly, one, are you going to be participating in the Ice Cube League of 3-on-3 basketball half court?
Ice Cube League. I tell you what, I think that Allen Iverson is going to be in that, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yep.
Well, no, I'm not going to be doing that, to be truthful. Maybe I'll announce it. I'll let you know if as close as I'm coming to playing basketball anymore. My game now is golf, okay? It's very hard to injure yourself. Do you realize you go out there and sprain your ankle? A sprained ankle that used to be 2 or 3 days is now 2 or 3 months. I'm off that.
I've seen your ankles, Coach. Yeah, I've seen your ankles. I don't want you out there. You can broadcast the games. We know the coaching thing you're far too good for.
Yeah, exactly. All right, fellas.
Appreciate it, Coach. Well, okay, no Kevin McHale's been our guest, as he is weekly. Catch him tonight on the second game of the doubleheader on TNT. Much more show to go. We will be right back, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
If you're El Jefe and you're having a Josh day where you're a little slow on the trigger and said you missed your question being answered by Coach McHale when we cater to you way too much, but you are a loyal listener, go back to the podcast. We just had Kevin McHale on in a great couple of segments. You can catch them on the podcast. And as Nick always makes sure, he also posts them up on Twitter. So one way or another, get to the site, get those things, and get some good listening in. Those were good. While we were away, and because they waited for us, the Rams have named a new head coach. He will now be the youngest head coach in the NFL at 30. Sean McVay, the offensive coordinator for the Redskins, now the head coach of the Rams. Surprise you?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit more than a little bit.
I think a lot of folks thought he was a couple of years away from being ready for a head coaching job. 30 years old, turns 31 on the January 24th. I've always felt like I'm surprised when I see teams recycle coaches, right? Like you see a guy, you know what he's capable of. He goes somewhere, he does okay, he flames out, and he's on to the next team as another head coach. Or maybe he goes back as a coordinator for a couple of years, has some success, and then goes back and gets another head coaching job. I've always thought, why don't more teams do like what the Steelers did when they went out and got Mike Tomlin? I think he was 33 or 34 when they hired him. Mm-hmm. Great coach, been there 10 years, and he's done great things with the Steelers.
He's just a cheerleader, Barry.
Yeah, but he's done great things with the Steelers. But so you want to see that, but then the concern is, do you reach, right? Mm-hmm. Like, are you taking a bit of a reach when you go out and get these guys? Like, he just became a full-on NFL assistant in 2010. So he doesn't have a ton of experience. He's been a coordinator for a couple, 3 years now.
And here's the thing. He's the coordinator of the Redskins offense.
Yeah.
It's not like it's this groundbreaking, earth-shattering offense that everybody wants to emulate and say it's awesome. And by the way, on the Tomlin cheerleader thing, I'm just being Terry Bradshaw. He's not a coach. He's a cheerleader, yeah. Tomlin.
But
30 years old, and you're the offensive coordinator of the Redskins, whose offense was just meh. I mean, I don't know if that's enough. If you want to make a comparison, we talked about it yesterday. Kyle Shanahan, who's experienced with like over a decade of experience as an OC, I would think he would have been a guy. Maybe that ego thing plays into it. It's a problem for that more people didn't realize. But I thought Kyle Shanahan would have been a more experienced guy, same kind of credentials.
Yeah, it's an interesting move. I mean, hopefully they got their coach of the future. I mean, we'll have to wait and see. Obviously, you don't know. Bit of a reach, I think. But if he turns out to be a good one, then they've got him for a long time.
Yeah, no question about it. So now the jobs are filling up. Buffalo took Sean McDermott. The Broncos hired Vance Joseph. So those jobs are gone, as well as the Jaguars hiring Doug Marrone and then putting Tom Coughlin back in the front office as a VP. So with the Rams picking their guy, now it's either the San Diego Chargers on the clock, who are now the Los Angeles Chargers. And the rumor there is Anthony Lynn, the interim coach in Buffalo, is at the top of their list. He was their offensive coordinator. Also, Terrell Austin, the defensive coordinator of the Lions, in the mix. Matt Patricia, the D coordinator of the Patriots, in the mix. And then the Niners, who need everything. They cleared house. They need a general manager. They need a head coach. They're considering Anthony Lynn as well as Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator of the Patriots. And Kyle Shanahan. So it looks like, for one reason or another, Kyle Shanahan's ship may have sailed, and there's only two teams left that need a coach.
I'm surprised Matt Patricia hasn't gotten a job yet.
I would agree with that.
And I think that the Chargers would be wise to seriously consider that dude. I mean, you need kind of a change in attitude and culture with that team moving, and you need to – and what better way to start over, giving a young guy like that a chance mm-hmm. to come in and do his thing as well. Coming from such a winning organization like the Patriots, maybe you can get to L.A. and he can duplicate some of the systems as the Patriots used to make them as good as they are. I'm surprised. I mean, when you consider how well that defense is playing this year, I mean, they're giving up the least amount of points in the NFL.
You think that's a product of Josh McDaniels not succeeding as a head guy, nor Charlie Weiss, no Romeo Crennel. It kind of, under the Belichick tree, it seems like he leads the league in coordinators that were meant to be coordinators, not so much head coaches. You think that hurts him?
No, I mean, I don't. That would be like not drafting a quarterback because of his last name. I don't think you make those decisions
Where have you ever heard that?
I don't know. But I wouldn't make those decisions based on the failures of other guys. You have to look at what has this guy done, mm-hmm. right? Because just because they come from that tree isn't an indication of how good or bad they're going to be necessarily.
I like Matt Patricia's energy. You like you said, his resume and his stats and his defense year in, year out. No one was going to say that New England was going to have statistically one of the best defenses in the league. They're always good, but he always finds a way to make them better. And I think he's got that little bit of fire, that little fieriness that a head coach needs to have. I think I'd love to see him get a chance. Keenan was basically saying when we asked him that he doesn't think that either guy's going anywhere, McDaniels or on the offensive side or Patricia. So it'll be interesting to see if Belichick loses anybody.
Yeah.
So, and with that, by the way, the other thing that we've got a couple things we haven't talked about. We are charting the early prognosticators ranking the top 100 college players coming out. We can get to that. But first and foremost, one of the interesting things that you stumbled upon, which was the early prognostications for the top-ranked free agents in the NFL.
Yeah, I found this thing on Pro Football Focus, which, usually I just look at these and go, okay, whatever, I'll use it for research. But something struck me from it, which I don't know if I'm surprised about it or not, to be honest with you. It did surprise me to see the name that I saw at number two mm-hmm. on available free agents. But at the same time, the way that the guy played, it's not all that surprising. So this was Pro Football Focus's 2017 free agency tracker, and they ranked the free agents based on grade. All right, so the number one free agent, according to this, is Andrew Whitworth. All right, he got a 91.3 grade for the Cincinnati Bengals. So that's who they're saying is the number one free agent in 2017.
Where's AJ Bouye?
Number two.
Really?
They're saying that in this crop of free agents in 2017, AJ Bouye is the number two rated free agent on the market to be. His grade was a 90.9.
That means he's getting paid and he ain't coming back to the Texans.
That's literally 0.1 ahead of Malcolm Butler from the New England Patriots, who is third. So yeah, Texans fan, your AJ Bouye is a hot commodity
Trapp said he was going to get paid more money than the Texans, and he said this weeks ago. But I was like,
yeah, I said just the same thing several. I mean, this is a no brainer.
That's why I work.
All
you
got to do is watch this guy.
I'm just here to look good and quarterback the show. You guys bring the knowledge.
But all you got to do is watch what this guy's done over the last 6 to 8 weeks and see the impact that he's made. Listen to how many times they call that dude's name on a broadcast, and you realize that he at some point flipped the switch, stepped up. And he is a legit starter at cornerback in the NFL. And you're going to have to pay for that. Which is why I said, I mean, when you look at contracts and everything else, Jonathan Joseph may not be here next
Cushing
year.
Either.
Yeah.
Depends on what they do money-wise to try and keep a guy like that so that their secondary is lock, stock, and barrel tight. Hey, by the way, we also have the top 100 players overall in college. And since a Texan was number two on your list, I tell you that someone from the state of Texas is number one on mine. And I think you might be able to guess it, but we'll cover that next as we hit our last segment before we turn it over to the Blitz. We are ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Hey, Joel, Barry, and Nick, as we wrap it up, get ready to turn it over to the Blitz, but we got a segment left. We got plenty to get to, and Barry was saying on that list of ranking of available free agents for the 2017 class, A.J. Bouye, number two. A couple other interesting names, Barry, that came to mind when you looked at that.
Yeah, 23rd on the list, your Houston Texans, Quentin Dimps.
Well, there goes that show.
Comes in at 85.3, which, I mean, when you look at the list, if you start going through some of the names on here, Jason Pierre-Paul, Le'Veon Bell, Eric Berry's on this list, Melvin Ingram. There's a ton of talent, obviously, in the free agent pool. And to see A.J. Bouye at number two is just astounding to me. So good for him, though. Good for him. Really good.
Not a question. Anybody else on that list that's of name?
No. Texans wise, no. John Simon's down towards the middle of the bottom, and then it deteriorates rapidly after that. So that's your two big Texans free agents coming up that you're going to lose on the defensive side of the ball, or could lose.
Could
not
lose,
going
right.
to, but could lose. AJ Bouye and Quentin Dimps.
It's going to take a lot of number crunching and creative thinking.
Yeah.
So in other words, they're not going to be back. All right, so because it's Thursday and because Trapp is in on Friday, we got to get your take on the game this weekend between your Houston Texans and the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I don't think it's any surprise what's going to go down. I mean, I think that the Patriots and just about every aspect, when you look at it statistically, which you know I'm a fan of in some form or fashion, I don't use it all, but I use it to sometimes support an argument or when I'm making my picks. If you look at ratings for scoring offense, rushing offense, passing offense, and then the same thing on defense, scoring defense, passing defense, there's only one area that the Texans are better than the Patriots, and that's in pass defense.
I thought you were going to say field goal kicking and punting.
No, maybe, yeah, punting. Punt average might be there. But that's it. And, I mean, when you look at the history that these teams have together and the fact that I think I saw something where the Texans – I got to get this right because this is atrocious. Including a 2012 divisional playoff, the Texans are 0-4 at Gillette Stadium, losing each game by 13-plus points and three of them by at least 27.
Thus the 16-point opening spread.
That is not pretty. Overall, Houston's only won once in eight tries against New England, including playoff games, and that was in 2009.
They lost
17.
Their last five, and the last two they lost by a combined something like 54-3.
Yeah, so not good. Now, I mean, if you want hope, maybe if you could pressure Tom Brady, he's not the best under pressure. And you know, Clowney can certainly get some pressure, Merciless as well. So I think if they're going to have a fighting chance, they're going to have to at least force Tom Brady to be a bit uncomfortable in the pocket. Everyone knows that's the big thing, right? Mm-hmm. That's probably the only way anyone's beating the Patriots is to get a good pass rush on Tom Brady.
I heard some people go as far as saying, go at his knees, hit him low, because you know how much that he really starts to talk crap and whine to the refs, and it takes him out of his game.
And I think the other thing is, They have to limit the big plays in the passing game. The Texans have been notorious for all of a sudden. I mean, you look at like the Raiders game in Mexico with Richard, and they're giving up an 85-yard screen pass. Like you cannot let Tom Brady get those types of plays along with how effective they are at just moving that offense along. Doubt very seriously they're going to be able to stop LeGarrette Blount in the red zone goal line. That dude's a beast.
No doubt.
But I think overall, this is it. End of the line. I have the Patriots winning 28-10. The other thing.
So they beat the spread. Well, so eight. So they. Oh, okay.
I have a 28-10 Patriots. I think that the Texans run the ball, control the clock, and they're probably going to need at least something returned for a touchdown.
But if they do that, something. Quick punt on second down. And they just continue to pound in the middle of the line. Yeah. I think they got a shot.
It could be.
The final, I think, early before I make my prediction, down. I think 5-0.
Yeah.
5-0 or 4-2, I think I can see.
Strategic turnovers might be good. Like, you know what? Let's just give them the ball back now. That way you can control, you know, whether you have the ball or not.
That's why Bill O'Brien in his presser today was talking about the value of Shane Leckler.
Was he really?
Yes, he was. That is an early indication.
That is where your playoff team is, talking about the value of the punter. And I get it. Flipping the field is important and, you know, field position and blah, blah, blah. But if that's what you're hanging your hat on offensively, you know, is the fact that you can, we may stall out and we can't score in the red zone. But damn it, our punter gets the job done. He's like Big Daddy Kane. Goes to work.
Couple quick things before we get out of here. Matt Miller, NFL draft leader, writing a column on the 1 through 100 top ranked picks coming out for the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, Miles Garrett.
Yep.
Two, Leonard Fournette at LSU. Little shocker to me. Dalvin Cook all the way down at 9. Okay. Mike Williams of Clemson at 6. Alabama's got Reuben Foster, the linebacker, at 3, as well as Jonathan Allen, the D lineman, at 5.
He's got Jonathan Allen at 5, huh?
Yep. And he's got Jamal Adams, the safety of LSU, at 4.
Okay.
A little bit surprising to me, but
I saw one that had Deshaun Watson as high as 12. You buying what they're selling with that?
No, I'm not. And they've got, in this one, they've got Watson at 20.
Okay.
And he's the third ranked quarterback behind Trubisky of Carolina. But here's the shocker. You know who the second-ranked quarterback was?
Who?
Deshaun Kizer of Notre Dame.
That is a bit surprising.
Yeah. And again, our boy from Miami should try and do whatever he can to go back.
Not crazy, though. I mean, not crazy.
Okay.
And
how about this? This just in, the University of Texas and head coach Shaka Smart have suspended leading scorer Tevin Mack for violating basketball team rules. Second time he's been suspended this year. He's been averaging 15-5, scored 27 in a win over OK State earlier this month. But Shaka said, we have a set of standards that we expect people in our program to adhere to. Tevin has failed to reach them. A team that's lost 4 of its last 5, too, including a 3-point home loss to TCU on Wednesday. Horns are just 7-9 and 1-3 in the Big 12, and now they've suspended their leading scorer.
Welp, got to follow rules, kids.
I guess so far, not a lot of sunshine and rainbows under the Longhorn.
No, not at all. Hey, one more thing I wanted to bring up before we end it. Mm-hmm. I saw this. I love Pro Football Focus. If you're not on this website and you love football, you're doing yourself a disservice. But they had the best. They ranked the offensive lines for the NFL post, you know, after the all 17 weeks, 16 games. They have ranked. And they've given the preseason and the actual ranks for each offensive line, because offensive line right now, I think that the fall off from the best offensive lines to the rest,
right,
is pretty significant. And we talked about it before, but it surprised me, and did it surprise you, that the Tennessee Titans were the number one offensive line as rated by Pro Football Focus.
Everybody and their mother thinks the Cowboys have the best offensive line in football.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that the Titans were ranked 25th going into the season, and then they end up as the number one ranked. Now, Dallas, to their credit, ended up number two. They were ranked the number one offensive line. And then Steelers were third. Raiders fourth. And your Green Bay Packers were number five.
They've done a hell of a job this year. When you see him getting 6, 7, 8 seconds in the pocket, that says a lot about the success of Aaron Rodgers.
Did you happen to take a gander at where our Houston Texans landed?
I was
going to
ask you,
landed?
Where did the Texans fall?
Would it surprise you if they started the season as the 11th ranked offensive line in the NFL?
When healthy?
Well,
because they weren't even healthy to start the
season.
Even
healthy, I probably wouldn't have put them near the top 10. They finished 18. Yeah, not that great. Just ahead of the Lions. Just behind the Panthers. So
and did
there
they
you
break
go.
That down between rushing offensive lines? Rushing and passing,
because
I did see the one where the Packers were the number one for passing.
Well, I knew you'd notice that.
Of course.
I somehow.
Yeah. I know. It's just a sixth sense you have.
In fact, when you brought it up, I think I just ignored it.
Sick as in the flu that you've been experiencing, not like a sixth sense.
Yes, that's true.
I understand.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. We've got, and you want to make your quick predictions on the Final Four?
Yeah. I've got Steelers in overtime.
Over the Chiefs,
27-24. Yep. The Packers winning at Dallas, 24-21. I have to.
Okay.
Like I said, my Super Bowl was
The
Steelers defeating the Packers, and I'm not going to shy away from that.
All right.
So Green Bay beats Dallas 24-21.
You got the Texans losing to the Patriots.
Yep. And the Falcons beat the Seahawks 24-20.
Ooh. Yep. So there you have it. So
that's it.
AJ wants to call you out on your death pool thing. Did you do your death pool?
I have not.
He has not, he says.
I will do it before I leave, though, AJ. Put him on, like, what? I will do it before I leave. I'm putting Fred in there. I don't care what anyone says. Fred is my number 10 on my death pool.
It's just not nice.
Why? He smokes.
I know he does. But you don't have to give these kind of secrets away to other people.
And he drinks. I'm putting him. I might put you on.
Thanks. You want to go running after this?
No.
All right. There you have it.
Not at all.
All right. So that wraps it up for Barry for the week. Travis is in tomorrow, and we're at Trailer Wheel and Frame, I-45 and the Canino exit. So why don't you get in your car, your truck or trailer, stop on down and see us at Trailer Wheel and Frame. We're going to be there from 1 to 4. John's going to be there with Sean and Raheel. We'll be there all day making a party of it. It's not a party unless you're a part of it. So stop in and see us. And whatever you do, listen to us Monday through Friday, 1 to 4, right here on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.